Well, even when you know it's coming, the death of a loved one comes with many emotions to unpack. And I think this is especially true when it's your partner. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Our guest today has his partner died 5 years ago, and he's written a beautiful book, a really beautiful book about his journey with grief. The book is titled Waving Goodbye, the subtitle Life After Loss. And the author is Warren Kozak. He's an author, journalist, whose writings have appeared in lots of places, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, New York Sun, other papers and magazines. And as we talk with him, I hope you'll join in. What helped you deal with the loss of a loved one? What are you maybe struggling with in that area? Love to have you part of the conversation. You can call us at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Warren Kozak, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's a great pleasure to be on WPR and be on your show. I like to listen to it when I'm in Wisconsin, so it's well, fun here.
And speaking of that, you have a pretty strong Wisconsin connection. Tell us, what is Wisconsin for you?
It is true. I am a cheesehead. I grew up in Wisconsin. I grew up in Milwaukee and West Bend. I still have a home in West Bend, and I spend a big chunk of the year in West Bend. So
it's
in the blood.
It's in your blood. Okay. And you lost your wife, Lisa, 5 years ago. Why was this a good time to write about it?
It was actually 6 years. We just passed the sixth anniversary. Why was that? Good question. Why? I didn't intend to write this book. I had no intention of writing it. And it was after 5 years. Actually, let me go back to one more step, Larry. Right after she died, which was January 1st, 2018, people brought me books. I looked for books. I looked for anything that might help. And I found most of the books impenetrable. And one of the reasons, it wasn't really the fault of the book. It was me. And I think people don't realize that you really have trouble focusing. What I say is my brain just went out to lunch. And it was weird because during her illness, I could take care of her. I could take care of our daughter, who was then a senior in high school and then her first year of college. And I could do my day job, usually from the hospital on a computer. And right after she passed away, I just lost my focus completely, which I have heard is not uncommon. It's kind of a normal thing after a trauma. And I couldn't – the books didn't help me also because a lot of them were written by psychologists, psychiatrists, and written in a very academic way. And that is why I found them impenetrable. I wrote this book it's a short book, short chapters, very clear sentences for people who are just going through it. And there's one line actually from the Joan Didion book that she wrote that has always stayed with me. When a friend of hers said, after a year, I could read headlines and I could really identify with that. Your brain just isn't able to take things in the way it normally does. After a year, it's better. After 2 years, it's even better than that. But everyone is different, and it hits everyone in different ways.
Yeah. Did it help? I mean, I wondered about the process. Did it change your path with grief?
I think I did find it cathartic. I found it helpful to write. It also helped me knowing that the book might help others. And here's a story for you. I had a very good friend who was a former nun. We shared the same birthday, and she was exactly 30 years older than me. And right after Lisa died, a mutual friend had a little birthday party for us. And I had just turned 65 that day. And my friend Elizabeth McCormick turned 95. And somebody said to her, "Elizabeth, so what have you learned in your 95 years?" And without missing a beat, Elizabeth said, "When you help others, you feel better about yourself." And I've always thought about that. And I think that I would include that in the book now, the impact. If I can help someone else, then maybe, you know, something good can come out of this.
Yeah. Well, I think it kind of surprised you, and it would probably surprise others that even though you knew Lisa would die, when it happened, you had trouble accepting that.
I was dumbfounded.
Yeah.
Even though the doctors were very clear and they were pretty accurate, you know, as to the timing and the schedule, and I just didn't believe it would happen. I didn't believe it. So I thought I write in the book, I thought I would be heroic. I thought I think I was anything but heroic. I was just, you know, completely shocked. And then I had to settle myself down because there were, you know, I have a daughter and I had to help her. And if you're an adult, you do the responsible things. And I think that actually helped.
Yeah, I'm glad it helped, for sure. And your daughter, what did it mean for you to have the support of family and friends? You write about that in the book.
It saved my life, to be honest.
Yeah.
One of the things I wrote was that a couple years later, when COVID hit, I felt so horrible for the people who lost someone, and they couldn't have the normal process of grieving. I said that if Claire and I, my daughter and I, had to come back to an empty house after the funeral, it would have been devastating. But there are rituals, and I never realized how important those rituals are. I'm Jewish. We have something called a Shiva, which is the Shiva in Hebrew stands for seven, and it's the 7 days when people come to the house. I think every religion, every culture has some variation on this. And I know Catholics have wakes. And coming into you know, it's a time when you would rather just curl into a ball and close the door and not see anyone. And you're forced to be social. You're forced to greet people. You're forced to say hello, how are you? Thank you for coming. And it is those first steps that you are taking back into life, and you're kind of forced into that. And I found that incredibly helpful. And even though I had gone through Shivas for my parents and my grandparents, it was the first time I realized its importance.
Yeah. Dennis in Two Rivers has something for us that may relate a bit to this. Let's go there. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, thank you. My parents were in hospice care for a while, so we pretty much knew one of them would die before the other. And when my dad died, my parents and I both went through anticipatory grief, and anticipatory grief wasn't really a preparation for full grief for my mom when my dad died. And it was definitely different to go through anticipatory grief than the full grief when they both died. I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah.
Dennis, I think you are absolutely right because I tried to anticipate it. I tried to gear myself up for it, and you can't. You cannot. It's completely different. The other thing I said was that it was one of the most confusing things I have ever encountered in my life because here I was with this person throughout her illness. And then I was with her when she died, and it's the same person I'm looking at, but she has gone into this different realm. And it's a realm filled with mysteries. It's the mysteries we don't understand. You know, human beings since Genesis have been dealing with this. And it's just this new paradigm filled with mysteries that we don't know.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And maybe take a call from Cindy in Madison as well. Cindy, hi.
Hi. I'm calling because my dad and mom were married 60 years. And my mom recently passed like 4 months ago. And it was relatively sudden. We found out she was sick and then she died like 10 days later. And now their 61st anniversary is coming up. And I'm wondering what the best way to support my dad would be. I mean, he's doing okay. He has a lot of support with his church. And he's active still. And he's, but I'm concerned. I don't want it to be an anniversary party necessarily, but I want to make sure that he knows that I don't know. I really don't know what to do, so I'm wondering if you have any advice.
Cindy, ask him. ask him how he might want. When is the anniversary?
April 16th.
April, so it's coming up. Yeah. And also trust your gut and be with him. Just be with him. And it you said over 60 years? Was
yeah.
That?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What happened with me, Cindy, was that I realized after several years, and the first year is awful. It just, there's no way of getting around it. And every one of these dates, you know, birthdays, anniversaries, holidays, you know, the person isn't there. And that is the hardest. It does get a little bit easier in the second year. For me, it did. And as I said, everyone is different. But I you know, talk with your dad. See, and you said he's doing well, so that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, and talk to him. Cindy, thank you very much for calling. Warren Kozak, our guest today, he is the author of Waving Goodbye, Life After Loss. And you can join in, too, with your own thoughts and comments. And I will say that Shyla Morgain will be coming up at 11:45 today, roughly, and she's a psychologist, of course, and will be dealing with this issue right through the entire show, so looking forward to that as well. Number to call, 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our technical director. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today with Warren Kozak. He's the author of Waving Goodbye, Life After Loss, the loss of his wife, Lisa. Now, just 6 years ago that he lost her. Join in. Questions, comments, numbers 800-642-1234. You can email to ideas@wpr.org. And your own thoughts afterwards that you say in there, in your book, that haunting silence was kind of the worst because your daughter had to go back to college. And thinking about your life and, you know, continuing on, I think you said there's nowhere to continue to anymore. At least that was your thought at the time.
Larry, that was the worst moment in a Super Bowl of bad moments. And it happened 1 week after she died. I asked Claire if she wanted to go back to school, if she wanted to take the semester off. And she said, no, she'd be better, you know, with her friends. And I was actually grateful. I think it was the right choice for her. So I took her back to school. I flew back home the next morning. And I opened the door by myself and I walked in. And this is after, you know, the house was filled with people. you know,
for a week.
People, relatives came, friends came, the guys from the gym were there. And all of a sudden you're by yourself and you're in this setting that is so familiar, that was so filled with life, you know, with, you know, we, my wife and I raised our daughter there. There were holidays and board games and we had dinner every night. And then all of a sudden you're facing this new life by yourself and you can't quite accept it. And what I wrote in the book is that for a while you kind of expect them to come through the front door again, like they did thousands of times before. And then after a while you realize that's not going to happen. And you're going to have to figure out this new life by yourself. And I did get some emails, and there's a couple that I put in the book that I thought were so helpful from friends who also lost their spouses. By the way, we should point out, Larry, this is 6% of the population, 3.7 million widowers, three times that, about 11.4 million widows. And that number is only going to go up dramatically as the baby boomers take their leave. So we're talking about it's going to happen to everyone. I wish I could say you can prepare for it. I don't think I could. But the good news here is that it does get better. It does get better. That haunting silence that you talked about, Larry. Eventually, you get used to it, and I come home now, and I'm happy to be home.
You know, this whole business about when you know that it's going to happen, and I can tell you that I had a daughter died, and we knew that was going to happen for a long time. What advice do you have for preparing yourself? Is there anything you can do to really prepare yourself for it? I found there wasn't much for me.
I found there wasn't much for me either. And I had some fantasies of, well, what would I be doing if Lisa weren't here anymore? And I had this vision. I describe it as, you know, when we're trying to think of infinity. And, you know, the mind can only go so far, and then you can't grasp the concept. And I could not grasp the concept. I thought I would be coming home and reading every book because I would have, you know, the nights free. So I would read every book in the house. I couldn't. I could read two pages at the most. And especially that first year, that your brain does come back. It takes a while. But your question is, how do you prepare? Maybe that's a question for your next guest, the psychologist, because I found I could not.
Did you
just have to deal with it?
And you know, I should have asked this maybe perhaps earlier, but you spent. And now I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry. You said that you wish you'd had more conversations, perhaps, with Lisa about when she was alive, obviously, about the coming death.
And she could not discuss it. There are some people that can. I've talked to a lot of people in this situation. Lisa couldn't. I think there was a reason. I'm guessing. I don't know for sure, but she lost her own mother when she was 12 years old. And she was horrified at the idea of leaving her daughter in the same situation. And it was devastating for her. And so she couldn't discuss it. But what I would do is I would reverse it. And there would be times we would be sitting in the hospital and she would be looking at her iPad or something or reading something. I would be at my computer. And she would just say things, and she would say, well, I guess I'm going to be buried in Wisconsin. And I kind of reversed it, and I would say, well, if something would happen to me. I said, well, I would like to have, a very plain funeral, plain pine box, I want to be buried where my parents and grandparents and great grandparents are buried. And she kind of nodded and she said, okay, but she said she didn't want to have the funeral in a funeral home. And I said, fair enough. We'll have it in our synagogue. And then she kind of nodded to that too. There was a funny part. there were humorous things that happened here.
Yes.
Because it's life, you know, and you know, there are wacky things and strange things. So one day we were in the hospital and she said, you know, it is said that if you've had a really good marriage, it'll be easier for you to go into another relationship. And I understood what she was saying. She was giving me permission to move on in the kindest way. And now it was I who could not deal with it. And I said, I don't want to discuss it. And then I realized that was so ungracious. I should figure out, you know, a way to thank her for such a nice thought. So I said, okay, this is reversed, if something happened to me, would I want you going into a nunnery? And I said, no, I guess that wouldn't be fair. But I said, you cannot have sex in the boathouse out at the lake. That is my turf. And you even try that, lady, and I will come down and throw lightning bolts at you. And I got her to laugh. So that made me happy.
Oh, man. Warren Kozak, our guest today, his book, Waving Goodbye, Life After Loss, the story of the life of his wife, Lisa, dealing with her death and his experiences with mostly himself, but also with his daughter, Claire. Although Claire, I have to tell you, I'm skipping ahead here a little bit, but in your postscript at the end, such a moving, thoughtful, insightful, and wonderfully written story that your daughter wrote about her mother.
Thank you. What I did there, Larry, was I wrote at the end of the book, this is about how I dealt with Lisa's death. And I didn't know really how it was affecting Claire, because even though we were talking about the same person, losing a spouse and losing a mother are completely different. And she was only 19. And I didn't know until about 3 months later, she shared with me an essay she wrote for a college writing class. And I was so moved by it that when I put the book together, I asked her if I could use it, if I could put it in at the end. And she thought about it for a couple of days and she said, okay, fine, you can do it. And I really appreciated it.
And it added a lot to the book. In terms of the writing, you did mention Joan Didion. There were a lot of books that you just couldn't get through. But Joan Didion's book, The Year of Magical Thinking.
Yeah.
What was in that book that you writes
about the sudden death of her husband, who they were sitting at dinner and he had a heart attack and he went to a hospital and I think he died within a day. And so it was a different event. But she wrote this book and it's considered to be the gold standard of grief books. And there were five really superb pages in it that really that stayed with me. And in fact, I sent those five pages to other friends who have lost spouses. But the rest of the book, once again, I couldn't connect with. It was it didn't quite work for me. And you know, it works for other people, and I understand that. And the psychologist books that I said I could not understand, maybe they've helped other people, and that's a good thing. But I was just, from my point of view, it didn't really help.
Let's hear from Nancy in Grafton next. Nancy, thank you for calling.
Hi. Well, let's see. I could go a long, long ways because I've been knowing people dying, including my mother, right from when I was only 14 years old. And so anyway, but my husband died about 6 years ago, and I'm telling you, we had 14 kids.
Oh, my gosh. That's wonderful.
And one at a time, too. We didn't learn how to make no twins. We didn't learn how. But anyhow, we practiced a lot. But anyway, he was in the hospital, you know, and he passed away. But the thing is, I worked at a nursing home after I had my 14th child. I went and get some training for doing that, and then after a while I was a hospice volunteer, so I knew a lot about those things. But you know, this is something that I gotta tell you. We were I'm pretty old gal, but anyhow, Bob and I are from Marathon County up there, and there was a lot of polka dancing going on, and we were one of the best on the floor. And man, oh man, when Bob died, I wanted to have a polka funeral. We're Catholic. But I said, we want to have a polka funeral. And it took a lot of, and our young priest finally let me have a polka funeral. And the good time Dutchman played all polka music and all spiritual words. And following the casket after the funeral, everybody was going right with the music, and nobody was crying, and everybody was smiling. And that's exactly what Bob would have wanted. And now he's buried right up the street from my house. I go up there every day. And, you know, my room was up there, too, but I got no blankets, no pillows, no, and my maiden name was Crawl, but I didn't crawl in yet. So anyhow, someday I'm going to get up there, too. But, you know, I look forward to the reunion, and I hope to heck he didn't find somebody to go dancing with him up there in heaven, because I'd be mad. I'd be jealous.
Well, Nancy, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And just a reminder, Warren Kozak is our guest. He is the author of Waving Goodbye, Life After Loss. And speaking of loss, we kind of lost him here. He was with us being a call, and we're going to get him back on. For sure, it might take a minute to do that, but we'll get him back on, and he'll be talking with us. I've got his book is just a wonderful book. It is as he said at the beginning, it's not a long book. It's a fairly short book, 175 pages or so, and each chapter is fairly short. Usually just a few pages, and deals with kind of specific things that happened over the last 6 years or last 5.5 years or so to him and somewhat to his daughter as they had to deal with the death of his wife, Lisa. And we've talked a bit about why or how she happened to die, and a bit about him dealing with the silence and having to deal with family and friends and getting over grief. And it's a very difficult thing. And I'm so glad we're going to be able to have Shyla Mergane come on as well to talk even more about this. And we're going to get Jill is giving Warren a call right now, and we'll get him on. And I think we have him back on. Warren, are you there?
I am here. We seem to be having some technical difficulties today.
That's okay. Let's take a call from Laura in Milwaukee. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
Hi, Laura? Thank you for calling. What is on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to share, if I can, I tell people I'm okay.
I
try to talk about it.
Yeah, you know what? I think Warren has some comments on that, Laura, and thank you so much for calling. We feel your pain. We feel your grief. Warren?
You know, this happened to me all the time, and it sometimes it hits you, and at times it comes out of the blue. I've called it a sneeze. You know, all of a sudden it comes on. You have no control over it. And And sometimes there are no discernible reasons for it, but, you know, it is part of the process, I think. It happened to me less after the first year, less after the second, but it still hits me. It still hits me.
Yeah. Laura, I'm sorry for your loss, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, you know, you mentioned earlier the percentages of men and women, widows and widowers, and there's a lot more women. There are a lot more widowers than there are widows, and men seem to remarry more often than women.
Yes, by a huge percentage. I've heard a number of different reasons for this. One is that men can't be alone. Women have an easier time dealing with that. I don't know if that's true or not. The other thing is there's a basic unfairness in our world where, you know, it would be not unusual for a man in his 60s to go out with a woman in her 50s or even 40s. And you don't usually go in the other direction there. But women do get into other relationships, and that's a very good thing. Well, you know, one of the important questions, Larry, I think would be what helped the most?
Yeah.
And what helped, and everyone is different, but what helped me was just putting on my socks every morning and getting up and forcing myself out. I'm so grateful. I have a job that I love, and dealing with people all day long helped. Just dealing with people getting to work, helped me. And I also have, you know, I am grateful. I am so grateful. I had so much more than a lot of people had. I had a great marriage. Not everyone gets that. I have a child who I adore, and our relationship has grown very, very close, closer. And I know not everyone gets that. As I said, I have work that I find very fulfilling. I have a great boss who I need to say something about this man. He travels a lot, and I would travel with him. And when my wife got sick, he said, I want you to stop traveling with me. I want, you know, work remotely. And I would be working from the hospital. But because of that, I got to be with her for the last 3 years of her life. And you don't find bosses like that too often. If I spent the first half of my career at ABC News as a writer for the different anchors. And if I'd still been at ABC, I would have had to make a choice, either leave work and lose my health insurance and to be with my wife or not be with my wife. And that's the other thing. I had health insurance, and I can't imagine losing someone and then also losing your life savings. And that happens to people. So I guess I'm at the end of the book, I said, never thought I would write this, but I feel very lucky. I feel lucky that she was in my life, number one. And I have fabulous memories of her. And those sustain me.
And you say, and I think you're right, you say at the end you realize this is kind of a love story.
That was the other thing I realized, that just as, you know, I was reluctant to talk about religion, but you cannot avoid it because religion is so intertwined with death. It's such an important part of it. And also love is too. It's very much a love story. And lucky me at the end to have had this.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you talked about listening to Spotify a lot. That's one thing you like you like to do, and it keeps you going. And we decided to maybe nearing the end here that we would play one of your favorites songs by Eva Cassidy, who unfortunately lost her life too early, is Fields of Gold. So let's, you know, right now, let's listen to Eva Cassidy singing Fields of Gold. Warren Kozak, our guest today, his book, Waving Goodbye, Life After Loss. Warren, it's been such a pleasure. I'm sorry we didn't have more time. There's so much in your book that we haven't talked about. And you were right. There are times in the book when a person can laugh or get a big smile. Thank you so much for writing it, and I really hope a lot of people get to read it. Thank you so much, Warren.
Larry, thank you. Thank you.
It's been a real pleasure talking with Warren Kozak. Please take a look at his book. And coming up, we'll be continuing our show on dealing with grief as Shyla Morgain joins us. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio.
But I swear in the days still left, we'll walk in fields of gold. We'll walk in fields of gold.
You know, everyone deals with grief in their own way, but having the help of a professional can make a big difference. Next up, we'll talk about how and what to look for when seeking help. Larry Mueller here and my guest, Dr. Shyla Morgain. She is a distinguished psychologist at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, and she specializes in adjustment issues, mood, and anxiety disorders. And I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about dealing with your own grief? Did professional help have you? What have your experiences been? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Shyla Morgain, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, it's an honor to be with you today, Larry. Thanks for having me.
You know, we just spoke with Warren Kozak. I don't know if you were able to hear any of it, but he was writing about the death of his wife. And he emphasized, not only in the book, but here in talking with us, that everyone in his experience, at least, the people he's talked to, everybody kind of grieves differently. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think Warren really captured so much of the challenges and complexities of mourning the death of a spouse. And I think most people could agree that your entire world changes when your spouse dies. And grief can be a complicated thing. I think in our country, we don't necessarily see models of grief. We often don't know how to grieve, and it can be challenging to grieve. And so really, you know, I hope we can talk about and also have listeners call in about some ways to take care of yourself when you're grieving the loss of a spouse.
Yeah, there's so much. Is there basic advice you have about dealing with loss?
You know, absolutely. I think grief can show up in so many different ways. When a spouse passes away, you know, there can be so many life changes that you feel unprepared for. There can be quiet in the house that you're not used to. Your routines and rituals can change. I think many people find that their spouse was responsible for one thing. Like, I think of my grandmother. My grandfather put gas in the car every day. And when he passed away, she actually didn't know how to put gas in the car.
Yeah.
Kind of an extreme example. But, you know, maybe you don't know how to pay the bills, or all of a sudden you're responsible for making a meal, or you're having to mow the lawn. And so it can feel really overwhelming. And grief, there is the emotional pain, like sadness. Some people, there can be numbness or shock at the loss initially. Then you usually go through sorrow. There can be anger at your spouse for leaving you. There even can be guilt. Guilt that you weren't the one taken, or even guilt that you didn't do something that they asked you to do, and you're kind of ruminating around that. All those feelings are normal, and you can kind of cycle through them. And there's no right or wrong way to mourn. I think Warren really highlighted that, and no rules about how you should feel. And then there's also physical pain that can come up. In addition to maybe feeling really tearful and crying easily, you might experience trouble sleeping, problems with concentration. Maybe it's hard making decisions. You feel a bit immobilized. And many people can feel a loss of interest in food, like they're not making food or they're not wanting to eat. And it can be hard work trying to put your own life back together in the face of kind of a seismic loss to your life.
So there's a lot there. Ashley in Spooner has something for us. I think we should go there. Ashley, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I am just calling because I heard you guys talking about grief, and I had lost my 17 and a half year old son in 2021. And I also had his little brother who was close to a year and a half. And my question is if, what advice do you have for a mother who's grieving, who still is a mother and sees, you know, my now almost 5 year old son struggling with grief?
Hmm. Ashley, thank you so much for calling. Dr. Shyla Morgain, what do you think?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Ashley, I'm so, so sorry to hear about the loss of your son. He was just taken way too soon. And I think a couple things really stand out. You know, sometimes there's some things we never get over. And I think the loss of a child and sometimes the loss of a spouse is one of those. I think one of the most important things is trying to find a support system. There are other mothers out there who have lost their children way too young, and sometimes connecting with them, even on social media, there are wonderful groups out there. I think that can be helpful. I'm a big fan of the work of David Kessler. Grief.com is his website. It's a website that offers free virtual supports as well for grief. And so I think that's really helpful. And I think the last thing I want to say, the work of David Kessler, and he has a great book on, we've talked about the stages of grief, but he actually proposes there is a sixth stage when you go through maybe that denial and then sadness and anger I'm kind of a bargaining phase. I should have, would have, could have phase. He says there's a, so acceptance. He says there's a stage after acceptance, and he says that's meaning making, making some meaning out of the tragedy, the loss. And sometimes that can be having a special day that you're remembering and celebrating his life. Sometimes that's maybe donating to charity, or maybe even it's making meaning by reaching out to another mother who's lost a young child or a teenager. But sometimes making meaning out of the loss can help us find some light in that, that darkness.
Yeah, I think that's very, very well said and very appropriate. Ashley, I'm sorry as well for the loss of your son. And David Kessler, again, Shyla, his where can we go to? What's his site?
Yeah, he's grief.com is his site where he talks about the stages of grief. He has a lot of resources. He has podcasts. He probably also has a social media presence too. But there's some free videos, and even even has some free webinars and support groups out there. So great resource. If you find, you know, your support system is lacking, I think this can be a place that could be helpful to find some online online support as well that's often free.
Thank you again, Ashley, for calling. Let's go to Paula from Milwaukee. Paula, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say your psychologist is right on there with the support groups, but first of all, I lost my husband to a drunk driver, and he decided to take his motorcycle on vacation with us. So we were right behind him, me and the two kids, 12 years old and 16. And the drunk driver crossed the center line and hit my husband on the motorcycle, and he killed him instantly. But then the guy kept driving into us at 55 miles an hour. And so it was a horrible, horrible accident, horrible night. And I just want to say that our psychologist helped us all very much, and the kids included. And you don't realize it, but sometimes they have some things to say about the mother, like me, like, because I'm dealing with my own grief in a different way than they're dealing with their grief. And so we had a great help with, I think the psychologist can speak of EMDR. It was therapy for the kids and me, because we kept feeling that, like, shakiness, like, oh, my God, it happened again. Oh, it happened again. And in the car, anybody who would come close to us with their car, we'd put our legs, or the kids would put their legs up, you know, like that. And so that EMDR helped, I guess I was explained that it changes where the thoughts are in the brain. It doesn't go away, but it goes to the back of the brain, so you can retrieve it as you want to, but it's not in the front of the brain, and it's a light type of therapy, and maybe she can explain that. Also, my last thing is that the support group that me and the children went to, I think it was on 70th and North, very, very helpful. They take the parents in one room. They do different stuff with the kids, all appropriate stuff for helping with the kids and their grief at their time, along with our grief at our time. And I think I'll take the answer off the air.
All right. Paula, thank you so much. Shyla?
Oh, Paula, I'm so sorry. And such a tragedy. Yeah. Yeah. I'm so sorry, you and your children and husband all. Just horrific. And I really appreciate it took courage to call today. And I also think you offered some solace to people listening too. And you bring up such important points. You're also talking about complicated grief, which affects about 7% of people who recently lost a close one. And I think complicated grief is associated with kind of intense, prolonged grief, having trouble resuming one's own life, resuming your own life, also feeling unable to comprehend the loss. And there can be overly negative emotions, maybe isolating, being unable to find meaning or purpose in your life. And I think you bring up sometimes loss is associated with trauma, you know, to be witnessing your husband being killed in such a horrific, reckless manner, and then having the motorcycle come into you. And trauma can be one of those things that can lead to complicated grief. And I really appreciated you talking about working with a grief counselor who specializes in loss that you can work one-on-one with. And EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy. It's one really effective form of treatment for trauma. There can be several. EMDR is one. When trauma happens, think about it as kind of being frozen in our brain, metaphorically. So when we think about what happened, when we talk about it, when we're reminded of it, it elicits really intense emotion. Unlike if you think about what you had for breakfast, you remember it, but there's no emotion. So EMDR can help by moving between the right brain and the left brain. It sounds like you used the light bar that went back and forth. So you're doing eye movements going back and forth, left to right. Sometimes people do auditory in your left ear and right ear back and forth, or there can be sensors that you hold that have a sensation, like kind of a sensation, tactile sensation in the left hand and then the right hand back and forth. And that seems to help, that plus that exposure remembering process. So instead of being frozen in the brain.
Yeah, we can continue this, Shyla and Paula. We'll take a quick look at the news and then we'll be back. And Shyla will be with us till 12:30. Stay with us. Thanks so much for listening along on WPR. Larry Mueller here talking about dealing with loss and grief on the show today. And our guest, Dr. Shyla Mergane, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Love to hear from you. You can give us a call or shoot us an email to ideas@WPR.org. And Shyla, as we were breaking for news, we were talking with Paula from Milwaukee, a horrific accident, including the death of her husband, an accident that she was also involved in with the children, with her children as well, and talked about the help that she got from a psychologist. She used EMDR, I believe.
Correct. Yeah. And I think Paula really highlighted something else that is important to keep in mind. When you lose a spouse, you're grieving, but your children are grieving too. And the relationship can change with your children. So, you know, in addition to if you find yourself having grief that is lingering and causing complications, receiving grief counseling is so important, but then also maybe encouraging your children to reach out for professional help as well can be really important.
And just a reminder too, if you're listening and struggling with mental health or some issue of this nature of grief, there's that easy phone call too to 988, which is the crisis hotline or lifeline, as they call it. It's just 988. Jan in Madison, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Jan.
Hello. Thank you, Larry, for these guests. They are so helpful. And I just wanted to add my two cents of something that was very helpful when my husband died. I was given a very small book called Healing After Loss by Martha Hickman, H-I-C-K-M-A-N. It's Daily Meditations for Working Through Grief. I read it for an entire year because it is a daily meditation. And then I go back to it every once in a while, because it's amazing. I've passed this book, bought many, many books and given them to friends, and they say the same thing, which is kind of interesting. They'll say, it's uncanny how this book speaks to the needs of the day.
Oh, Jan, thank you so much. Healing After a Loss. Shyla, comment?
So helpful, Jan. Thank you for sharing that resource. And having that kind of daily focus can be helpful. Many people experience a sense of loneliness. Maybe they've never lived alone after the loss of a spouse. And having something you can focus on each and every day is useful. So a daily book like that might feel really supportive and validating, even give you some coping strategies. I also think making sure you are making plans and staying active, having things to do every day. And if you're working or retired, having that plan in place, like maybe you're going to the senior center or you're visiting the library for a free resource they offer. I'm always in favor of people adopting a pet so they have that fur friend in the household. Making sure you're staying in touch with family and friends, or maybe even exploring a hobby like joining a singing group or a bowling league. I think initially after the loss of a spouse, there's tremendous support. People come with casseroles and there might be the memorial service or funeral, but several weeks, several months later, it can feel quite empty and alone. So I think that's why having a book like that can be so helpful, The Healing After Loss by Martha Hickman, or just making sure you're getting out and staying active is really helpful.
Yeah. Jan, thank you so much for calling. Kathleen in Madison, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Larry, and thank you for the topic today. So many of us need this support and these ideas. My question for Dr. Mergain is this. I'm wondering if in her practice she sees differences in how men and women grieve the loss of a spouse. I mean, do they come to you with different concerns? Do they need different kinds of therapy? What might be different for men and women?
Good question. Thank you, Kathleen. What about it, Shyla?
You know, that's a great question and really speaks to people can grieve in different ways. And often men and women do need different things as well. And again, when I think about that, oftentimes there can be struggles, like maybe a husband that is now a widower may have not been responsible for some of the household tasks, and that can be challenging. Or maybe for, a woman and losing her husband, maybe she's not used to the yard work. But I think, you know, there is commonality that men and women share many of the same feelings when a spouse dies. Both may deal with the pain of loss, and also both may worry about the future. I think, you know, there can be some, I think there's some research on the widowhood effect, that men who are widowers might have an increased risk of dying compared to a woman who's a widower. So I go back to, it's so important to maintain a social support network. Get out, stay active, find that sense of meaning and purpose. And I also say it can be challenging if all your friends are couples. So if you're now a widower and joining the couples for the Friday night dinner, it can really highlight the fact that your spouse is no longer there. So it might be important if you're going out with your couple friends to find a new way of connecting, like maybe taking a walk or going to see a movie together, so it doesn't have to feel as challenging.
Good points. Kathleen, thank you for calling. Denise in Madison, we'll give you a chance. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I'm about 21 months out of my husband's passing. He died within 9 weeks of a brain tumor diagnosis, totally unexpected, and now my mom's in hospice. And our family was fractured, and my kids have disappeared from helping with my mom, wanting to visit anything. So I know the previous author, Warren Kozak, talked about how close he got to his daughter, I think it was. But what do you do when your family, it's a triple loss, the loss of my husband, not being having time to grieve, then dealing with my mom, and then now the loss of my children. And I've been told, you know, that you should just lower your expectations, but when they disappear from your life, and that's your family. Yeah. I don't know how you find meaning, because I understand you have to accept the death, and then part of that acceptance is accepting to create a new life. But what? How do you do that when there doesn't seem to be anything left? And how do you repair family fractures?
Wow. That's a big one. I'm really sorry, Denise, for what you are going through. Dr. Shyla Morgane, what do you think?
Yeah, Denise, I think you're not alone in experiencing that. I think oftentimes the death of a spouse or the end of life for your mother can start to create fracture in families. I think finances is the number one cause of fracture in families. And I think it speaks to, you know, making sure you have your legal and financial affairs in order. And after the loss of a spouse, a person might need to update their will or get their advanced care planning, or maybe changing where the house or car is titled. And it can be one of those things that can cause that fracture as people are upset about how things have been divided. And it sounds like it's really important, Denise, to, you know, you love your kids and miss them. And so sometimes changing expectations around how they might be involved in your mom's time in hospice, and maybe trying to reconnect in some ways that feel a little more neutral, and reaching out and seeing what might work for them to maintain that connection and get together. I also will say that it sounds like there's a lot of, it's like multiple grievings happening at once, right? The loss of your husband after a brain tumor, your mom in hospice. And grief can take time. I've seen that first year can be rough. I think even that second year can be challenging. And sometimes having a little bit of patience for one's adult kids in the process, maybe extending an olive branch or two by reaching out, checking in, maybe expressing a desire to get together. That's important. And having some patience in the process, because, you know, time heals, and sometimes it just takes a certain amount of time for people to feel like they're kind of moved on, they're in that place of acceptance and ready to proceed.
Yeah. Denise, good luck, and thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. You were talking about some of the financial things, and I was thinking back to Warren's book, Waving Goodbye, where he does have a checklist of things of that nature, things that he thought he had correct, but wound up costing him a fair amount of money to get fixed because the wills and all that were not quite the way they should have been. And he describes a little of that in detail, and it can be really sad to have to deal with things like that when you already have so many problems. You can join in, too. The number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address, ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Basically, the goal of counseling, get us going on the right track, cure us. What's the goal there, Shyla?
Oh, I think, as a psychologist, I think everyone can benefit from counseling, but having a safe person that's neutral, just to provide a supportive presence where you can talk about the loss, you can express emotions about it, you can share your inner world, your inner experience in a safe, supportive environment. There is power to putting words to what you're going through with somebody that is a professional, that has strategies and resources. And I think that one of the most healing aspects of working with a counselor is just them witnessing your love of your spouse or loved one, the loss, the complexity of the emotions that are arising. There's healing there just by having that witness. And I think going to somebody who's a professional can be so important because that person, again, is neutral. They don't have any invested stake in it. I think talking to friends or, again, family members, right, they may be missing your loved one too. So it doesn't, they might have their own grief they're processing. And so it often can be helpful, but going to that counselor who has that knowledge and grief and maybe trauma and healing can be sometimes just the right ingredient to, you'll never forget, but it can help you feel like you're moving through the grief so you can live fully. And sometimes that's the best thing we can do in remembrance of the person we lost, is live fully and carry their light forward.
Hmm. Cindy in Stevens Point has something for us. Let's go there. Cindy, hi.
Hi. I lost a sister 3 years ago and then her husband unexpectedly the following year. And it changes the whole dynamic. I've lost my father, my mother, and now my sister. And it changes the whole dynamic. The family reunions, they stopped. All kinds of stuff stops. And it's like everybody starts figuring out what they want to do with their own families and their lives. So my brothers and sisters and I just don't get together anymore. And I think that lady that feels so alone, I think she needs to, like you said, maybe find a counselor, but also depend on your friends. But you have to call and tell them what you need, because your friends don't read your mind. And we all just expect people to show up and help us. It's not going to happen unless you ask. And you have to say, I really need you to come over so I can talk to you. Or will you help me with this? And I think that's what that lady that just called about her children and her mother and the loss of her husband. I think she needs to start asking people for help. Yeah. You know?
Cindy, thank you for calling. What do you think, Shyla?
Yeah, Cindy, thank you for sharing. And we're so sorry about the loss of your sister. And what you highlight is you're not only losing that loved one, but you're often losing those traditions or those routines or those experiences that were just standard when that person was alive. For you, it's the family get-togethers. For others, it might be having those adult kids come over all the time. And that can be a secondary loss that you're grieving. And I think what I love with that advice you gave is that it's okay to make the first move when it comes to planning things to do. Reach out to that friend, invite them over, make plans with that person. And it's also great to be open to new experiences and maybe find an activity that you might want to explore where you can have fun and meet people who like to do the same thing. And we do in our communities often have places like a senior center or a place to volunteer where you can be around like-minded people and maybe you're doing an activity together, which is really good bonding. And you can strengthen meaningful relationships with maybe new friends who over time can feel like your adopted family members.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Barbara in Madison will give you an opportunity. Thanks for calling, Barbara.
Thank you. It's been 25 years since my mother and my husband died, and not at the same time, but very close together. And I went right back to work. I work in an operating room. And I think there comes a time when you have to say that things that you felt were hurtful at the time were not meant to be hurtful. I had my boss who gave me lunch the first week I was back within a week or so after my husband's death. I came back from lunch and he says, well, I'm working on the newsletter. What's new in your life?
Oof.
That was a week after my husband died. I had another friend who asked me 2 weeks later, how long did you grieve? And I realized later that he was Jewish and I think he was talking about sitting Shiva. I think mm-hmm. that's what it's called.
Yeah.
But the one that hit me the hardest was totally innocent. But everybody in the operating room just stopped what they were doing. My mother had donated her body to the medical school. She had always said, if some resident or intern can learn something that helps somebody or saves a life, I want them to do it. If they can dissect my hand and learn how to repair an injury. But I'm working in the operating room, and this resident runs in all excited and tells the resident that's working, as soon as you're done, come down to the lab. We've got some new heads to work on. Mother's head.
Oh, boy. Well, Shyla, what can you say?
Oh, Barbara, whew, that must have been just so painful. And heartbreaking, and really appreciated you calling and sharing this, because I think you're also really suggesting for people to be prepared for family members and friends to not know what to say, or to say the wrong things, or even try to comfort you with cliches like, oh, she's in a better place. Oftentimes people may be well-meaning, but they can be uncomfortable with grief. They don't know how to talk about death. And as you're highlighting, like with your boss, it doesn't necessarily mean that they don't care. And it can be empowering just to tell people you're close with what you need or don't need. You probably don't need a lot of unwanted advice. You might just need somebody to sit and just listen. Just listen so you can talk and they are just listening. And often I give people the advice, if you are listening and trying to support somebody in grief, you don't have to say a lot. You can just say something like, oh, you know, I feel your pain. I don't even know what to say, but I care about you. I'm here. Something like that can be one of the most powerful things. Like, I'm just here. I just want to listen. That's often what people need.
I think the other point that Barbara is making, maybe indirectly, is that here it's been 25 years and she has not forgotten. She hasn't forgotten her husband, and she hasn't forgotten the comments that stuck with her. And I don't know how you get through that. Try to understand, or how you move on from that.
Yeah, I think, as I said at the beginning, some losses I don't know if we ever fully get over. We just learn how to move through the world with them. There was an author who wrote about grief saying it's kind of like a missing tooth that your tongue goes to and you feel that hole. I think that can be when these loved ones we hold so dear are gone in the physical form. How do we, you know, we move with it, we carry it. And sometimes, and I think the previous author talked about faith and spiritual religious tradition sometimes can be quite comforting in whatever way works for you, as it maybe can help you hold that loss so you can continue to move forward with your own life, which again is a great tribute to the legacy that they live by you moving forward, living your life as fully as possible.
That's a very good point, Shyla. I want to thank you today for taking time to be with us. I think this is an important show. I hope we can replay this show at some time or continue with the same topic down the road. Dr. Shyla Mergane, our guest, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. And I want to thank everybody who phoned in today. I know it was hard for a lot of people to speak up, but believe me, your comments were well appreciated, and I'm sorry we didn't get to everyone. So means that we'll have to do this again down the road. Thank you all. Thanks to Dr. Shyla, and thank you for listening today. Tomorrow, we're back to Friday, and that's Garden Talk. And so we'll be talking about prairies on the show tomorrow. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mehler.